Up next on Opening Move, host Scott May speaks with Jim Zemlin, the executive director of the Free Standards Group, dedicated to safeguarding the future of Linux through standards, on Open Source Conversations from the GigaVox Media Network.
Welcome to another episode of Opening Move. I'm Scott Mace. My guest this time is Jim Zemlin. He's the executive director of the Free Standards Group. I'm calling him today from my studio, and he's over in San Francisco. Jim, how is everything this morning?
Things are great. A little rainy over here, but other than that, things are good.
So there's a lot been happening lately in the open source world and the free software world. I want to start with just some background on the Free Standards Group and what it is. Can you explain for our listeners what the Free Standard Group does?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Free Standards Group is really the standards body for the Linux platform. Our organization hosts and funds the work for the Linux standard base, which is a standard that ensures interoperability between applications and certified versions of the Linux platform. That is what we do.
And why is there a need for a free standards group? At one point, I think I read that one of the goals was to stop Linux from having the same kind of fragmentation problems that Unix had.
That's exactly the goal of the Free Standards Group, is to prevent the fragmentation of Linux. The real enemy in the world of Linux is Microsoft, obviously, which has been made even clearer lately. And the key for any successful platform is to have lots and lots of applications available for that platform. And the more applications you get, the more users you get. If you have functionally equivalent but incompatible versions of Linux, you'll have fewer users of any version of that software, and therefore you'll have fewer applications available for any version of that software, reducing the overall value of the Linux platform and making it very difficult for the Linux platform to compete against Microsoft in their monopoly standard.
Microsoft certainly started out being very anti-Linux, but lately they seem to be embracing Linux, and yet they're still the real enemy of Linux?
Yeah, well, certainly. I mean, they're a competitive monopoly platform, yeah.
But what does it mean that they are now in this relationship with Novell, where essentially, I guess, they'll be distributing Linux, and they'll be promising to be nice to the Novell flavor of Linux anyway, and how does that affect what your work is doing?
Yeah, their primary business continues to be the Windows platform. So regardless of channel programs that they enter into and whatever impact they might have on the Linux marketplace, they're still primarily Windows. And it's important for the Linux community to do things well that attracts the same kind of things that Windows does well. Do the same things well in Linux to attract people to that platform, which includes having standards, guaranteeing, you know, backward compatibility, having excellent developer tools, and making it just simple for people to adopt the overall Linux platform. And that's what our organization is focused on.
There are obviously several distributions of Linux that are popular. Novell's is but one. How does the fact that there are so many different popular distributions of Linux affect what you're trying to do to keep Linux standardized?
Well, we work with each of those different Linux distribution, either vendors or non-commercial Linux distributions. And today, all of them are working within our standard setting effort and comply with the LSB standard. So what is important for us to do is to set up an infrastructure within which that collaboration can take place. And so our organization focuses on really doing four things well to allow the various competing versions of the Linux platform to cooperate in developing this standard. And what you really need are these four things, which is a good standard-setting forum, so work groups within which the distributions can define the specification that is required for application portability on Linux. You need excellent testing, so to build out a comprehensive test suite that tests all of the interfaces that have been standardized through the LSB is a hundreds of man-year project and involves a huge amount of effort to do. That's an excellent shared cost for all of the different Linux distribution vendors who would probably rather not shoulder that testing burden on their own. So the testing that we do in addition to the standard setting work is something that's a valuable shared cost for all of these constituencies and something that they obviously don't differentiate themselves on, in that that testing provides for assurance to customers that Linux will be high quality, will have very few regressions in terms of binary compatibility and so forth. And the next thing that we do is provide tools for application developers so that it's dead simple for them to target the Linux platform. We recently introduced the LSV Developer Network, which is a set of tools that provides ISVs such as SAP or MySQL or Real Networks or Adobe a way to write an LSV compliant application and really reduce their cost of targeting multiple Linux distributions. And the final thing we have that makes it easier for people to collaborate is a certification program where distribution vendors or applications can download our tests, they can upload their results in a secure manner, our organization can validate those, they can then click through a license of our LSV certified mark and use that mark to indicate to their customers that they believe in open standards and choice, and that's something they can use to differentiate themselves from proprietary monopoly standards, specifically Windows. So that's how we work in, as a consortium or a open community collaboration vehicle to make this happen.
Is the LSV mark a voluntary program, or do people who join the Free Standards Group have to use it?
Let me assure you, all standard setting is voluntary in nature. There is no punitive standard out there other than sort of the rule of law, right? In other words, no one's going to go to jail because they don't use the LSV mark. The program is entirely voluntary. People who certify to the LSV standard have an incentive to use the mark, and that incentive is their customers want it. What it tells their customers is that when an open source distribution or application promises choice, that by complying with a open standard, that they're really putting some meat behind that promise of choice. And it's something that they can differentiate themselves in the market with. And with that kind of customer demand for open standards and choice, you produce a market incentive that people will, look at and voluntarily comply with the standard and use that mark.
So how widespread is use of the mark today?
Well, right now, if you go on to Red Hat's website, I think you're just one or two clicks away. Same with Novell. If you go into any retail outlet and find a copy of Linspire or some of the more retail-focused desktop Linux distributions, you will see the Linux standard base mark on those on that packaging. I expect that the LSV mark, as an indicator of open standards and compliance, will continue to grow not only its awareness but its demand from end users.
Is the mark the same thing as having binary compatibility in Linux, or is that a different level of standardization?
Yeah, binary compatibility is a different level of standardization. The term binary compatibility is, in the technical world, a very loaded term, and I'm hesitant to even use that term when describing this. What the LSB mark indicates is that the provider of that particular distribution or application has written it in a portable manner. What it doesn't guarantee is that this is something that is outside of the support agreements that any individual entity or corporation has set up. In other words, it's not an we don't want this to be some sort of implied guarantee of support from Novell or Red Hat or Oracle or IBM or HP that, you know, if it's got that mark, we'll take a support call on any distro. That's not something that a standards body can do. That's something that is really in the world of business in terms of guaranteeing support for whatever a particular company wishes to enter into a support contract to do. What we do is just make the cost of adding incremental support to whether it's additional applications on a single Linux platform or offering support from an ISV perspective for multiple Linux distributions, we make that cost significantly lower. And that is really what that market indicates today.
So if I'm trying to port an application from one Linux distro to another, can you characterize how much?
I would write an LSB-compliant application. Your porting costs would be minimal across different LSB-compliant distributions. In other words, there will be a guaranteed set of interfaces, libraries, a standardized file hierarchy. The core set of components that your application requires will be present on any LSB-compliant system. Anything additionally that you might require as an application, you could ship with that your own application itself, and you know, the cost of supporting multiple versions of the Linux platform would be significantly lower for you, the ISV.
Does the LSB standard have a emphasis on either the server Linux or on the desktop Linux, or is it pretty even across both?
It's pretty even across both. It's a horizontal standard, so it's not applicable to any particular vertical industry segment, but we look at the world in terms of server and desktop primarily today.
Do you trouble yourself with certifying KDE or GNOME or other GUIs on top of Linux?
So the Qt and the GNOME, the GTK libraries are part of the standard today.
I'm not sure I understood the answer.
The desktop libraries that are in GNOME and KDE are already a part of the standard today. We don't certify those desktops. What we do is we certify distributions who utilize those various desktop libraries to ensure that they're present in their distribution.
Now, what is the Portland project? Is that part of all this, or is that something else?
Now, the Portland project is just like any other upstream open source development effort. It's something that freedesktop.org has been working on to improve compatibility between the KDE and GNOME desktops. And, you know, just like we work on standardizing the, you know, glibc or GCC in the LSB, Portland is another upstream project that we would consider once the distribution vendors come to consensus that this is something that they wish to standardize.
I was on your website and I looked at what's called the LSB roadmap, and I have to say I need some help here understanding exactly what this roadmap entails. I see description of a LSB 3.x and an LSB 4.x and a lot of different milestones for each one, but what is this roadmap? What's it about?
So if you're looking at the LSB roadmap, what you're seeing here are different releases of the LSB over time. So currently the LSB is in version 3.1, which includes a core set of libraries, a file hierarchy standard, standardized configuration language, and so forth. And this is really the core of LSB. What you also have in the LSB today is standardized C++ and so forth. What you're seeing in subsequent releases of the LSB are additional libraries and components that are being added to the standard in order to improve the sort of promise of improved portability across different Linux distributions. So if you see today, the LSB is primarily, the primary benefit of the LSB today is having standardized C++ across all the different Linux distributions. We'll be adding things like Perl, Python, additional desktop libraries. We'll be standardizing printing support to enable plug-and-play printing on Linux, additional multimedia components, accessibility libraries, and so forth. In the next release of the LSB, which is LSB 3.2, in around June of next year. After that, in roughly 2008, We will be adding even more libraries and components to the standard. So in other words, we're standardizing more on LSB 4.0 in 2008. And again, that just goes towards improving portability for applications as the standard grows in nature. What we're really doing here is looking at what does a typical application need to be to have, in other words, guaranteed to be present in different versions of Linux in order to write a portable application. So that's sort of where we start in building this roadmap. And what we have is a whole bunch of libraries that need to be standardized. And the process of standardization is getting all of the distributions and key stakeholders together and deciding what we want to standardize, in what time frame, which versions, how we want to do it. And this roadmap reflects that consensus among the various Linux distributions who are participating in this work, along with their ISV partners who care about the Linux platform.
Do you have an opinion about whether Oracle will fork the Red Hat distribution? I know they recently joined as a platinum member of the Free Standards Group. Maybe it's impolitic for you to have an opinion, but I'm just wondering, there's been so much press about it, and it seems that it's in the interest of your group for there not to be a fork. Any thoughts?
By joining our group, by definition, they're saying we're not going to fork. By definition, I mean, when you join a standards body at the highest level, when you commit to going forward with supporting the LSB, by definition, you are uniting the Linux community and not forking.
Back to Microsoft, does the...
Which, by the way, that is the real competition here. This isn't a Linux distribution versus Linux distribution. And our organization really we don't play a role in how different organizations compete around support pricing or whatever offering that they might bring to the marketplace. I assure you, in working with all of these Linux distributions or companies like Oracle, these are very well-run companies. These guys know how to compete, and they can do so effectively while continuing to offer choice to their customers through supporting this standard.
Okay. In the wake of the Novell announcement, it looks like Microsoft is trying to reposition Linux as, in extreme cases, a non-commercial product. I'll just give an example here. Bill Gates is quoted this morning on CNET saying that the GPL version 3 is obviously a non-commercial license. In their discussions of what they will and won't be concerned about regarding use of Novell Linux technology, they make distinctions between things that are commercial and things that are non-commercial. It strikes me that the Linux community has to be concerned about this positioning, if it is in fact a repositioning or not, but it's really not about commercial versus non-commercial, or is it? What do you think is going on here with Microsoft's positioning of Linux?
So, Microsoft has a rich history of spreading fear, uncertainty, and doubt in any marketplace that competes with their core product offering, which is the Linux platform. I mean, they ran full-page ads in Europe with different versions of penguins with antlers and, elephant tusks and tails and stuff like that, showing that Linux might fragment. Their director of platform strategy was quoted just this, a month ago, saying, it's a challenge for people to support Linux because you never know what you're going to be supporting. And I think that you can just continue to expect Microsoft to, engage in competing with Linux, while at the same time, working with companies like Novell to, enter into sort of co-opetition, which you so commonly see in the technology world, right? Because, you need a lot of different interoperable components to put together a technology solution, and no single company can do it on their own, albeit I think Microsoft has thought that they might be able to do that, and are probably the one company through their monopoly status that could perhaps do that. I think that the key thing for the Linux community to focus on is debunking some of the FUD that Microsoft might be putting out in the marketplace, but more importantly, looking at what makes Microsoft so successful. You know, one of the, you know, you have to look at these guys and say, hey, what do they do really well? You know, and a couple of things they do really well is they do standardization well. They have a rich backward compatible API ABI. You know, a well-written DOS app runs on Vista today. You know, but this de facto proprietary standard out there makes it exceedingly difficult to create a compatible competitor, right? You know, look at OS2 or Wine. But, you know, at the end of the day, you look at it and say, hey, they've got, you know, very good standards that they comply with, albeit in their own walled garden. That's something that the Linux community, and that's something that the LSB, we're trying to make sure that we do well. They do good testing. You know, they have Windows Hardware Quality Lab, provides a huge resource for driver testing. They have a good application testing program through an ecosystem of certification programs for the Certified for Windows program. The MSDN is a rich set of developer tools and a developer program that really is second to none. You know, these are all things that the Linux community can focus on and emulate and provide more value to their customers. And I think that's something that you see is not nearly as interesting on a day-to-day basis as, you know, talking about who's going to sue whom for what type of patent infringements or some sort of licensing problem. But at the end of the day, that is what customers of technology really care about, are, you know, is high-quality software that has a rich functionality they require, is cost effective, and you know, has a long-term guarantee of compatibility within their infrastructure.
Do Microsoft's recent moves increase a sense of urgency about the work that the Free Standards Group is doing?
No, but you know, I think that if you look at the Linux marketplace, it's in a new stage of growth. You know, Linux is an $18 billion marketplace right now. There's a dynamic set of competitors within that marketplace. And so as you enter into, you know, sort of the early evangelism stage and into a steady state of growth stage, there is a renewed set of, there is a renewed sense of urgency for things like standardization, as this software runs mission-critical systems that will be in action for years and years and years. To that degree, to that end, I think that you're seeing a new sense of urgency around making sure that the Linux community gets this standard right.
The Open Source Initiative is having a dialogue right now about what it means for something to be an open standard. Is that dialogue something you are a part of, or that you have, what's your perspective on what they're saying?
No, I think it's positive that they're talking about how you define the term open standard, because, you know, to quote a famous phrase, you know, the nice thing about standards is there's so many to choose from. And I think what OSI has looked at is the nice thing about the term open standard is that it can mean so many things. Is that something that implies that anything in a standard is available under you know, reasonable and non-discriminatory licensing terms? Is that something where is an open standard defined by everything needs to be available that's in the standard under completely royalty-free terms? You know, there's a host of issues relative to how you define an open standard. Should the process to be setting a open standard be open to anyone to participate, regardless of the size of the resources of a particular organization or person relative to participating in that process? So by bringing a definition to the term open standard, I think that OSI is doing a good thing for the marketplace, because you know, that's something that eventually a user of technology can look to as a promise that their whatever technology that they procure will provide for choice, because it's interoperable and there are competing products around that interoperable standard, and will not subject them to, you know, paying royalties or anything to any unreasonable degree to any single entity over time. So, you know, I'm working with them, watching that process, and I think it's something that OSI has successfully done relative to definitions around what open source means, and it's something that obviously will be helpful relative to you know, creating a crisp definition of what open standards means as well.
How open are your own processes? Does membership entitle people to a certain level of information or power decision-making that non-members do not have?
Completely transparent. You can go and join the Free Standards Group today yourself. You can hop on our mailing list and begin participating in the process right now.
What are the biggest challenges facing the Free Standards Group?
I think that some of the big challenges are making sure that we provide for high-quality testing of our standards, making sure that, because that's a very time-consuming from either participation of individuals to help write those tests or from a cost of having our organization pay to have people actually develop those tests on our behalf and on behalf of the industry. So I think that's one of the big challenges that our organization faced. And let's face it, at the end of the day, written specifications are only as good as the tests because, most developers don't go and read a multi-thousand-page specification document when designing software. I think one of the other challenges of our organization is making sure that all of the different players in the Linux marketplace reach consensus on what they want to standardize, although I think that risk is somewhat low because there's a history of good cooperation within our process. I think that one of the challenges is increasing the awareness of the fact that there is a standard out there, that customers should request that standard in order to develop the market incentive that I described, which will provide an incentive for people to continue to participate in good faith in the standard setting process and preclude the Linux platform from being fragmented. So that just gives you a flavor of some of the challenges for our organization in the next couple of years. What I can say, though, is that with those challenges, we've also been wildly successful here at the Free Standards Group. Our organization has grown fourfold in the last year and a half. We've increased the membership of our organization from both an individual and a corporate sponsor point of view. If you're on our mailing list, you can see that the traffic just even on the mailing list as a proxy for interest in the standard has gone up significantly. So, things are looking really good in terms of, I think, the industry, the community, all are really serious about providing the standard to people who use the platform. I think that we have sort of a historical opportunity here to get right on Linux what Unix got wrong, which, Unix was allowed to fragment into roughly functionally equivalent but mutually incompatible platforms, and I would say that ceded much of the world to the Microsoft monopoly, and it's important that history not repeat itself. And I think here at the Free Standards Group, we have an opportunity to make history by continuing to keep the Linux platform united against what the real competitive threat to Linux is, which is a de facto monopoly in the marketplace, which is Microsoft Windows.
I'm curious about your thoughts on this week's announcement of the GPLing of Java. And the reason I'm interested is they seem to be very agonized for a long time over at Sun about the effect that GPLing Java would have on the standard Java. And now they seem to be thinking that the nature of the GPL in the community is such that the community itself will kind of keep Java from fragmenting. But over in the Linux world, there's your group that's obviously dedicated to make sure that doesn't happen. Do you think the Java folks will need their own free standards group at some point?
Well, we'd like to think so. We'd like to think that, they took a look at our organization and had faith that being open is not necessarily a bad thing, and that being open doesn't necessarily mean that things fragment and sort of fall to pieces. So I guess, I don't know, maybe it's a high form of flattery that they looked at what we're doing over at the LSB and said, hey, this is something we can do with Java. Although I suspect that wasn't the first thing on their mind when they actually did that. I don't want to be so self-serving here, but you know, I think that obviously it's a positive step that Sun is being more open with Java than less.
You're also seeing your Linux standard base appear in the requirements of these customers as you've been urging them to do. So I imagine you have some stories of companies, even governments, demanding it at this point?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, the U.S. Department of Defense, large end users of Linux, are telling their Linux distribution partners, their system vendor partners, their application partners, that they want to have choice. And for them, mandating a standard like the LSB provides them with that choice, because what they get with the standard is a rich, backward compatible API, ABI for the Linux platform. They get quality assurance. They get a guarantee that in the long run, regardless of the particular vendor partner they choose, that they're choosing something that in its entirety, in other words, collaboratively, is a long-term backward compatible platform. And that is highly important to people who deploy this in mission critical systems. That is something, you know, by preserving, by mandating the standard, preserving choice, increasing competition, while at the same time maintaining long-term compatibility, that is something that has always rewarded technology users, and will continue to reward technology users over the long run. They get it. These people are savvy. I suspect that the demand for open standard-based technology products, whether it's OpenOffice and ODF, whether it's the LSB, or any other open platform, will always be the preferred platform of choice for technology users.
Where can people find out more about the Free Standards Group?
www.freestandards.org.
Well, I want to thank you, Jim, for speaking with me today.
No problem.
This is Scott Mace for Opening Move. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Opening Move with Scott Mace.
The post-production audio engineer for this program was Bruce Sharp. Our website editor was Scott Mace. The series producer is Joel Cherney.
This is Phil Windley. I hope you'll join me next time for another episode of Opening Move here on IT Conversations.